Yeah, enjoyed it, Richard. It's been a quality event on the whole. I think one or two of the games have perhaps been, I wouldn't say disappointing, but maybe have lacked a little bit of kind of the razzle-dazzle and top quality that you expect from some of the world's best teams. But to be fair, it's going to take a while for some of those sides to really hit top gear and ease their way into the tournament. Teams like New Zealand and France in particular are quite kind of notable that they don't always hit the ground running immediately and just grind their way through and hit their straps and find their form when it really matters toward the business end. So yeah, I've had the pleasure of watching five games so far, two at Twickenham, two at the Olympic Stadium and one at Wembley, and yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it so far. Watched the All Blacks last night against Namibia. I thought Namibia were excellent, and okay, they got thumped, but you know, they really took it to the All Blacks, and when they scored a try, just a wonderful atmosphere around the Olympic Park. Night before, Romania, excellent again against France, and gave the second string French team a little bit of a scare, shall we say. So yeah, enjoyed it so far, but of course some huge games to come this weekend. Can't wait for being at England-Wales on Saturday night. And of course, in your neck of the woods, two big games at Elland Road as well.
Just looking back at the shock of the tournament so far, it has to be Japan beating South Africa. Really, just one of the moments which are going to live with a lot of people for a very long time.
Yeah, would love to have been there for that. Unfortunately, I was at Twickenham that night for a very lacklustre France against Italy game, which is just the kind of match that I was talking about that hadn't quite, you know, captured the imagination yet. But events in Brighton earlier that day were just magnificent. We were watching the end of it in the press centre, and yeah, every journalist, apart from a couple of very glum-looking South Africans, was leaping around. The fans outside on the big screens were chucking their pints everywhere and getting stuck in. And it was absolutely wonderful the way that Japan, you know, took it to a quality team like South Africa and the strongest available South African side for that game as well. And the fact that they went ahead, went behind, you know, got back on parity, went behind again, to have that strength of character and the fitness and just the technical ability as well to score that late try in the corner, it was a wonderful sight. And that sort of old Japanese fan who was there in disbelief with tears rolling down his cheeks, that was just an iconic moment that I think not just the Rugby World Cup, but probably sporting history as a whole will never forget. It was absolutely fantastic.
Obviously, tomorrow, as you mentioned, we've got the big game at Twickenham, England versus Wales. Which fans will have tears of joy and tears of sadness on their cheeks by the end of that one?
Oh, it's going to be so interesting to see. I've spent most of the week with the England camp, and I'm off a little bit later on today to watch the captain's runs where both teams trot out at Twickenham and then put up a couple of final players to the media. So, you know, we really are counting down to kickoff, Richard. And I think England will do it, but I think it's going to be a very, very tight game. Of course, the Welsh are bereft of three of their star performers, as we know, for this World Cup in Jonathan Davis, Reece Webb and Lee Halfpenny, which is a huge loss. But, you know, given one or two other injury concerns that could have set them back further, they've put together a very, very decent starting 15 for this game. They've got issues at prop. Potentially, if England could maybe exploit that, that could be one way forward. But the big talking points from England's point of view, Richard, of course, Owen Farrell preferred to George Ford at fly half. That's a very, very big call indeed. No Ben Morgan, so Billy Vunipola comes in at number eight. That's not going to be a particularly big issue at all. And of course, Sam Burgess, the rugby league convert, is starting. It's his fourth cap, and what a match to start in the absence of the injured Jonathan Joseph, who was England's player of the Six Nations and has been excellent. He'll be missed, but what's your take up there on how Sammy will get on?
Well, I was, as Tom will attest to, I was quite annoyed by some of the questioning yesterday in the press conference with Stuart Lancaster and Sam Burgess about how he'd be able to deal with the pressure. Because
not my bits, I hope.
Oh, no, of course not, because yeah. As you well know, he's played in big pressure games before, not least in the Rugby League World Cup for England and that semi-final defeat against New Zealand, but also winning the man of the match, the Clive Churchill medal in the Australian NRL Grand Final this year, so, last year rather. So he's a man who can deal with pressure. I've no questions, obviously, on his rugby union ability. He's less than a year into the sport, but for a man to be questioned on his pressure, I thought was a bit out of line. But it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. It certainly got the attention of the media up in Yorkshire. Both the local TV news stations were leading with that as their story last night on the sports news. And
good.
Obviously, a lot of ex-England players have weighed in with their opinions. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes. So if you were Stuart Lancaster, would you have picked him?
I think it was the way forward. What I would say is that Henry Slade, who was the other option, has been outstanding. He's a young player for Exeter Chiefs who actually played alongside Burgess in the centre combination, which was kind of the second string team that took on France and England's opening World Cup warm-up game, which they won at Twickenham a few weeks ago. And Slade has been an excellent player all season. He is very young. He could have been an option. You could have actually played Owen Farrell at centre and kept George Ford at fly half. So there were other options in the absence of Jonathan Joseph. But you look at what Burgess brings to the table, and as you say, he's a proven winner. He is somebody who goes out there and inspires, not just with his physicality, but with his attitude to the game and to his attitude with teamwork as well. I've been really impressed the time I've spent with Sam, either with Bath or in the England camp over the last few days and weeks. And he's a cracking bloke. His teammates really, really respect and kind of build off him. That's very important. It's just for me that little bit of a question of, okay, he's played three, this will be his fourth rugby union cap. He's been in the sport bar that cheekbone injury since last October. He's played a couple of different positions. It's just thinking like a rugby union player instinctively, instantaneously, when one or two moves take place, when the high ball is put up, he's got to do the kick chase, just positioning defensively at centre at times as well, and tracking his man, but not necessarily leaving too wide a gap as well. There are just certain things that you need to have played the game for a good while to do. He's learnt them very quickly. Has he learnt them well and quickly enough when it comes to this cauldron, this test against Wales, Rugby World Cup game at Twickenham, and of course opposite Jamie Roberts, who is a star player himself, one of the best probably the world has seen for many a year at centre, and that's going to be a hell of a test in every regard. It's going to be the colliding of two giants, isn't it? And it's going to be just brilliant to see how they go head to head.
This obviously is one of the big battles, England v Wales. They've met each other so many times in previous competitions in the likes of the Six Nations. But do you think with the couple of injuries that Wales have, that are big injuries, it makes England the favourites?
Yeah, I think England are the narrow favourites coming in. But obviously, as we've just discussed, you know, each team has lost players. But Wales lost the majority of theirs a good while ago and have had time to kind of tweak their squad, bring in one or two new faces. OK, they've lost one of those to injury as well in Corey Allen. But they've kind of had more time to adapt on the hoof. And for England, it's two injuries picked up in training for Morgan and Joseph, so this has all been kind of put into place this week. But as Tom Wood was saying to me a couple of days ago, the back row forward, England had an excellent 50-man squad to start the training programme, cut to 40-odd, cut to 39, cut to 31 eventually, and you have this strength and depth and players playing together in training in camp for 12, 14 weeks for a reason. It's so that people slot in and do the job that's needed, but do it in the England way and keep the tactics and everything that's been worked on in training spot on under the highest of pressure. And hopefully, from England's point of view, that's what's going to happen. So I'm going to say England to win it by probably about 6 or 8 points. But I think it's going to be a cracker. England have won the last two games between the teams, of course, in Cardiff this year and in Twickenham the year before. But we shouldn't forget 2013 when England went down to Cardiff going for the Grand Slam. Of course, the Welsh absolutely thumped them. I think it was 30-3. And all the England boys have been saying that that scalding, wounding loss has been chief in their motivation factor. That still rankles, it still hurts. And they would love to again atone for that, despite having beaten them twice since. But on this huge World Cup stage, and I should quickly say as well, there'll be a lot of Welsh fans there, far more than in the Six Nations, up to about 20,000 of the 90,000 could well be wearing the red and waving those irritating inflatable leeks as well.
It's going to be some atmosphere. Before we let you go, because you've got to get to Twickenham to see both teams with their captains run this afternoon, we've got two games here at Elland Road. Our studios are across the road. We've seen the transformation of Elland Road from a football ground to hosting its first ever Rugby Union International. Scotland play the USA on Sunday, and on Saturday it's Italy versus Canada. What do you make of those two, Russ?
Yeah, let's start with the Italian game against Canada, shall we? So Italy, really poor when I watched them against France the other day, and they missed their captain Sergio Parisse so much, the Stade Francais back row forward who just is their talisman, and he's not fit for this game either, so that's a big, big setback for them. The Canadians, not great in their opener either. That was against Ireland, and Ireland ran in 50 points against them pretty comfortably. So fair bit of work for both teams to do. You think Jacques Brunel's Azzurri should do it. They've made some big changes up front as well. They've dropped the likes of Martin Castro Giovanni, which is a big call. So Lorenzo Cittadini comes in, for example, as well. Matias Aguero's out. Michele Rizzo's in. So up front is clearly the area that Italy are trying to improve. move and feel that they can get the job done. And they should, because if they lose this game as well, then they're in all sorts of trouble in terms of their hopes of qualification. And then, yes, Scotland against the USA on Sunday. Really looking forward to this one. I thought Scotland were excellent against Japan. Of course, the Japanese, as we've been discussing, had beaten South Africa just a few days before. That had tired them out emotionally and physically. But the Scots, for their opening game, were just bang on it from the get-go. I think Mark Bennett, their young centre, is an outstanding player. Watched him a couple of times in recent months before he got injured. I'm delighted he's back. He scored a brace of tries. Greg Laidlaw has been restored as captain at scrum half and with the kicking duties. He's not the most dynamic of players, but he's very consistent. And I just think he adds an extra element that Scotland need in terms of their solidity at the moment. And just finally, the USA are a really interesting story. Rugby's a growing sport in America, like it is in various other parts of the world, and they're just keen to really do the Stars and Stripes proud. They pushed Samoa very close in their opening game, played very well in that one. Have they got enough to do it? I don't think so, but I'll just pick you out a couple of players there to watch. Of course, Chris Wiles of Saracens, really talented player, plays at fullback or on the wing for Saris. He plays at fly half, the playmaker position, and skippers the USA, so watch out for him for the Eagles. Blaine Scully's an excellent player. Hayden Smith is a former NFL star who's come back to rugby union, and on the wing Taka Nguyenya, who I've seen play in the top 14 in France for the likes of Biarritz, is a very, very decent finisher as well. So they've got threats across the park, but I'd go Scotland to win that game up at Elland Road on Sunday, and I think Italy to win on Saturday as well, and of course England to beat Wales too.
Well, that's great. That's all our research done now for the week, and we don't have to do any work me until. So we're going to both games. Final question, it's a quick one. Who wins the World Cup?
I'm going to say, oh God, I've been really struggling with this. I've been asked this several times by an awful lot of people. And you know what? My heart genuinely does think that England has got a very, very good chance. If they can win their group, avoid the likes of the All Blacks and get through effectively to the final, then I think anything could happen on that day at Twickenham on October the 31st. I think England have got a very good chance, but it all centres around them winning their group. I thought the French looked great in their first game when they put out their first team. They've got a very decent chance, I think, as they always do of growing into the tournament. So I'd probably go the French and the English from the Northern Hemisphere, Ireland not too far behind, and then from the Southern Hemisphere, I think New Zealand will be excellent. South Africa have got a hell of a lot of work to do, and Australia didn't look great against the Fijians. I'm not too sure about them. So I'll say New Zealand to make it from the Southern Hemisphere. I'll go on. We'll go England-New Zealand final, and we'll say England to win it, and it to be just an incredible historic day with tears rolling down my cheeks just like that Japanese guy.
Excellent stuff for us. So it's okay, I changed my mind on who's going to win the Super League week in, week out. We've only got two weeks left of the season. Russell Hargreaves from Talking Rugby, thank you very much for your time, and enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Will do, pal. Speak to you soon.